This is Jim Inkster, and thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Signature support is from First Financial Tax and Accounting Services. Your number is 877-217-5757. Emails to talk at talklouisiana.org. And we are slated to hear anytime now from Jim Donilon, the longest-serving insurance commissioner in Louisiana history. An election is 4 months and 7 days away, and Jim Donilon will not be on the ballot. He is not running for re-election. He won a close race, relatively close, although he pulled away at the end and defeated Tim Temple, who spent lots of money, outspent Jim Donilon on the campaign. But Temple ran a vigorous race, and Jim Donilon decided not to make a go of it. And right now, the only candidate in that race is Tim Temple. And as we know, insurance rates are a big issue in Louisiana right now. All kinds of insurance rates, and so it will be fascinating to see if Mr. Temple draws an opponent. It's a tough job. As we know in recent memory, three insurance commissioners have actually served time in prison, and Sherman Bernard, Doug Green, and Jim Brown. And Jim Donilon has avoided that. He has a career that spans a half century in Louisiana politics, and he is a survivor of the first degree. And he is with us. Usually Jim joins us in studio, but he makes that commute every morning, and sometimes things don't go according to plan. But again, your number is 877-217-5757. And Jim Donilon, let's cover as much ground as we can. Hurricane season started June 1, and every year you go on a tour advising people to be insured. But we know particularly flood insurance is costly. And some believe it's cost prohibitive, but is it, even with the increased price for it, is it a good investment?
It's the best insurance buy any property owner anywhere in our state can make. Still, even with the increase coming with risk rating 2.0.
All right, Jim, hold on for a moment. You're fading in and out, and we want to make sure you're in a better location, because I'm not sure our listeners could discern what you were saying. But to give you an idea, if you didn't get the gist, Jim Donilon says that despite the increased cost, that flood insurance is the best investment somebody can make. And Jim, as you know, back in Katrina, which is now hard to believe 18 years removed from the present, many people in New Orleans had lived in the same house for decades, and maybe their families lived there decades earlier, and in some cases they let it ride with no insurance at all, because they didn't have to pay insurance because they owned the house. And as we know, that was not a prudent move, and I know you're advising people not to repeat that calamity once again. All right, Jim, we're going to have to call you back, so hang on the line, and Robin will get perhaps another number where we can actually understand what you're saying. But Jim Donilon, for those of us who know and love him, he's not a person who is at a loss for words. He's been speaking eloquently since he attended Jesuit High back in the 1960s with Pat Screen and Rusty Staub and Ben Baggard and Charlie Lancaster and a galaxy of those who became movers and shakers in the great city of New Orleans. And Jim has run for offices. He served 19 years in the Louisiana legislature, but he lost a race for lieutenant governor in 1979 to Bobby Freeman, and he lost a race for U.S. Senate 1998 to John Breaux. But he's a guy who has great passion for his state, and he's decided to call it a day at age 78. He will not be running for re-election. If you look at him, he defies his age. He looks much younger. He certainly doesn't have trouble moving or standing up or anything like that. He is a gung-ho guy, but decided not to to make a run for it. Now, in most states in our country, the insurance commissioner's job is actually an appointed position. Louisiana is a bit of an aberration. We do elect our insurance commissioners. Most of us prefer elected positions to appointed ones. But Jim Donilon, as we get him back on the line, we'll ask him about that. But he was trying to give his message that insurance is important. Home insurance is a necessity, and flood insurance is a necessity. He believes even if you're not in a flood zone. And Jim, I think we got you to a better spot now. Could you expound upon that?
Absolutely. And let me start by apologizing. I had committed to being in studio, and today I'm driving. When I leave, I'm in my kitchen in Metairie as we speak, but I'll be going straight to the office and then to the legislature without looking at my calendar to realize that this was not a phone-in interview as most are. It's in person as we always are.
Well, you're crystal clear. You're crystal clear right now, so this is as good as being in studio. Right. So
wonderful.
Go ahead.
To your question, yes. Best insurance buy any property owner anywhere in our state can make. Back in 2016, when Baton Rouge was inundated with floodwaters, not hurricane-related, 2 days of 12-inch rainfall that flooded hundreds, if not thousands, of homes in the Metro Baton Rouge and Metro Lafayette areas. And payments from FEMA for uninsured property averaged $9,500. Payments for the 12% of the residences in those two metropolitan areas that had flood insurance, over $90,000 on average. Today, East Baton Rouge is at the state average. 24% of residences have flood insurance. West Baton Rouge, not so well, 16%. Livingston, 33%. Ascension, 37%. And statewide, 23%. That puts the Baton Rouge area just behind the Metro New Orleans area that has flooded many times, and 45% of the St. Tammany, St. Bernard, Orleans, and Jefferson parishes residences have flood insurance. As I said, best insurance buy anybody anywhere in our state can make to protect their property.
Well, a story that was above the fold last Friday in The Advocate in Picayune, Louisiana is suing nine other states. Mike Smith wrote this story in a lawsuit against the federal government over a new system for setting flood insurance rates, which is triggering steep hikes for homeowners. What are your thoughts about the lawsuit?
Well, I think the lawsuit is certainly a bit of a reach. This is a federal program. It's a FEMA program called flood insurance, but it's really not flood insurance. It's administered by insurance agents. Insurance companies do the back office work. Private adjusting firms are hired to adjust the claims. But it is purely a federal program, and the federal government makes the rules. I will say, though, the lawsuit that 10 states have filed, and I issued a declaration in support of that lawsuit, giving documentation and information to the litigants, to Attorney General Landry and the other state representatives in the lawsuit, on the history of the program, how it's regulated by the feds, and what the issue is, which is basically a lack of transparency on what the rating rules are for the new risk rating 2.0 system, contrasting and dramatically changing the way rates used to be set since the inception of the program after Hurricane Betsy hit New Orleans and St. Bernard parishes back in the 60s. And that change has really rendered, we estimate, thousands of properties in the state of Louisiana worthless, because without flood insurance for areas that require properties to be insured for flood in order to get a federally backed mortgage, which is 95% of the mortgage market, Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, Ginny Mae, et cetera, if you can't get a mortgage, you can't sell the property. And so overnight, those properties become worthless, actually.
Jim Donilon is with us, 877-217-5757. The insurance commissioner of 17 and one half years, longest serving commissioner in Louisiana history, not running for reelection. And I mentioned that I believe most other states, Jim, the insurance commissioner is an appointed position. Is that a good move, or would Louisiana be better served keeping things as it is, as they are?
Jim, as I have said when asked this question, like Senator Kerry, I'm not proud to tell you, as a legislator, I voted against that bill before I voted for it. And I forget which one was first, but I have seen up close and personal during my 17 years as the insurance commissioner how different it is in the states that are elected versus those that are appointed. And the big point of difference that everybody starts with is for appointed insurance commissioners, the average longevity of a regulator in those states is 3 years. And for those of us who are elected, for example, the dean of the insurance commissioners in the system today is the Washington State Commissioner, elected, and he's 3 years senior to me. I'm second most senior, and next to me in Mississippi, also elected, is the Mike Cheney, running for re-election, and 6 months my junior. So the electeds tend to stay around a while, a long time by comparison.
We do have to take a break, but we'll return in 90 seconds with more pearls of wisdom from Jim Donilon. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Jim Donilon is in the house for a little while longer, the insurance commissioner of 17 and a half years, 19 years in the Louisiana legislature. Before that, some office holding in Jefferson Parish, so he has been around for a while, and he will not be on the ballot come October 14th. But he did say as we went to the break, he prefers an elected insurance commissioner to an appointed one, even though most states in America do appoint their insurance commissioner. Much ground to cover in a short time to get there, and a story that was in The Advocate a few days ago from Michael Finch. This, too, was a front-page story. More Louisiana homeowners turning to unregulated insurers. What do you make of this, Commissioner Donilon?
And that headline did say unregulated, and that, unfortunately, is not the case. They are certainly less regulated, and for rates, they are unregulated. But for their handling of claims, for their solvency, the surplus lines market, which is what the article was referring to, which historically and all across America steps in and provides coverage where the admitted market, the traditional market, if you will, steps away. Unfortunately, surplus lines coverage does not come with the safety net of the guarantee fund for failed companies. But on the other side of that, in my 17 years, we have not had a surplus lines company go under as a result of its solvency that was impacting our state. They are regulated for solvency on a national level, although they have a domiciliary state. The most known surplus lines company that we are very dependent on and have always been in Louisiana because of our significant and expensive oil and gas operations, port operations, refineries, chemical plants, etc., Lloyd's of London. We are their sixth largest state for insurance premium paid in America. And that Lloyd's also provides homeowners coverage in the homeowners arena. We are 18% insured by surplus lines companies. On the commercial side, it's 34%. And yes, that's been increasing. We would prefer to get that coverage from the admitted market with the safety of the guarantee fund under those companies. But we have seen nine companies fail as a result of their troubles in Florida and the four hurricanes that hit our state in two of the past 3 years. Those were all admitted carriers, and the safety net of the guarantee fund is now paying $800 million, perhaps more, in claims left behind by those failed companies. None of the companies that were writing in our state for the past 10 years in the property insurance market on a surplus basis have failed.
877-217-5757 is your number. HB in Denham Springs. HB, you're on with Jim Donilon.
Good morning. Mr. Donilon, this applies mainly to Livingston and Ascension Parish, who for people who do not live in a flood zone, yet with the continued building in wetlands and areas that are known to flood causes those areas to continue or to become flood zones that were not flood zones due to unbridled building.
All right.
That's correct. No doubt about that. And that's an issue for FEMA to enforce its own rules, which they have neglected to do throughout the history of the program. And that neglect certainly does increase the cost for those who are required to get flood insurance and for those who are not required but want to get it for the protection of their properties. That's a major concern for those of us who are advocating for the flood program and for responsible development and building, not only in Livingston Parish, but all the parishes across the state of Louisiana.
We started our conversation, thank you, HB, we started by noting that June 1st was the start of hurricane season, and this year has been projected to be a light year, but you never know, and when I say light, fewer hurricanes, but all it takes, as we know, is one devastating one, and that changes the game. And you stated on this show, and a listener takes note of it, that Louisiana, I guess because of geography, is the most vulnerable of all the Gulf Coast states. Why is that?
It's because we're in the center of the bullseye. When Ida cleared Cuba and entered the Gulf, the Weather Channel and the Weather Service put the cone of probability stretching from the Texas line to the Mississippi line, and it never wavered and made landfall smack dab in the middle of our state's coast at Port Fouchon with 150 mile an hour winds, just as had been the case the year before when Laura impacted Lake Charles with 150 mile an hour winds. We have, over the past 100 years, on a per capita basis, been hit by named storms or hurricanes four times more often than our friends in Texas and our friends in Florida, just because of our location right in the middle of the Gulf Coast.
David in Atlanta. David, you're on with Commissioner Jim Donilon.
Good morning, gentlemen. Mr. Donilon, the temperature of the oceans are the warmest since records were kept. CO2 in the atmosphere is the largest it's been in millions of years, and it's up 50% since the Industrial Revolution. I can go on, but my question is, given these facts, if we have a Republican president like Donald Trump and a Republican governor of Louisiana, and Louisiana is one of the most greenhouse gas polluting states in the nation, how long do you think it would take before homeowner insurance and flood insurance becomes unaffordable in Louisiana?
All right. Well, I'd rather leave the politics out of it, but we do have a real issue with climate change. I think all of us acknowledge that. And Jim Donilon, are we doing what we should be? And ultimately, it really doesn't matter if you have insurance if we wash away. What do you think?
I think that nationally, the alarm has been sounded that the American dream of home ownership is in jeopardy. And it's for a combination of reasons, climate being certainly one of those. Wildfires are much worse and more widespread than ever in not just California, but most of the western states. In fact, 2 years ago, Australia set the record for wildfire damage that nation has experienced. In our case, we can measure the sea level rise, and that certainly represents and documents the threat to us that did not exist 50 years ago. And the hurricanes that have hit us, Laura and Ida, 150 mile an hour winds, those were the most powerful hurricanes to hit our state, according to the Weather Service, since the last island hurricane of 1856. With 156 mile an hour winds, Category 5. Laura and Ida with 150 is a strong Category 4 hurricane. Katrina, by comparison, and Rita were both Category 3 hurricanes when they made landfall in the southeast and southwest corners of our state some 20 years ago. So no question about it. We're mindful of those threats and those challenges. We are spending huge amounts of money to restore our coast, the first protection from hurricane and flooding events, and making significant progress in that effort across party lines and with the national government involved in support of that effort on both sides of the aisle. We are doing the effort at Risk Rating 2.0, hopefully better enforced for land development than the old system of pricing flood insurance, will deter irresponsible development in high-risk areas. I don't think there's any doubt but that all of the public officials in our state and across the nation are mindful of these challenges and, I might add, are learning from these disasters and are building better and addressing those defects and shortfalls in the ability to deal with the new reality in our country and, for that matter, around the globe.
Well, Jim Donilon, it is always a pleasure. We'll hopefully catch up with you again very soon, even though you're not running for re-election. Jim Donilon is a great observer of Louisiana life and politics, and it's always good to get his point of view. Thank you, Jim.
Thank you, sir.
And we'll be back with more Talk Louisiana. Darius Lewis, the president of the East Baton Rouge Parish School Board, is on deck. He's back after this. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Your number is 877-217-5757. Emails to talk at talklouisiana.org. Darius Lewis is with us. He's on the school board. He's president of the East Baton Rouge Parish School Board. Product of the school system in this community. He attended Forest Heights Elementary, Glen Oaks Middle, and Glen Oaks High School. In college, Darius attended Southern University, where he received bachelor's, master's, and law degrees, graduating with honors at every level. And he's a young man on the rise, and it's good to catch up with him, as always. And good morning to you, sir.
Good morning, Jim. Darius Landis checking in, East Baton Rouge Parish School Board President. It's always great talking to the people of Louisiana and surrounding areas about things that affect our school system. So any questions that you have today, I'm open and ready to talk.
Darius Lannis is at your service at 877-217-5757. And Darius, there are budget issues. You're trying to find the money for teacher pay raises. How significant are the budget concerns right now?
That's significant enough that we're still dialoguing about it and having a conversation about it. But what I want everyone in our community to know is that we're working diligently around the clock. There is no timetable on how much time we need to spend on doing this. We're going to do this and work and strum through our budget until we get it right. And what I mean by getting it right is, one, creating a budget or approving a budget that does not directly impact our schools, a budget that includes pay raises for not just teachers but support staff, so that includes cafeteria workers, janitors, bus drivers, and everybody in between, paraprofessionals. We just want everybody to know that we appreciate all of the work they do, understanding the historic nature of where we were about 5 years ago when we did teacher pay freezes. It's been time for us to, past time rather, for us to get this right for our teachers in our school system. But it just, you know, we just need to put our best foot forward in making sure that it does not impact our students in a way that is deemed to be negative.
The proposed raise for teacher pay, it would be a starting salary at $47,800, moving to $51,360 a year. It would put the school system second only to Iberville Parish for the Baton Rouge region, equating to about an 8% hike. Now, where are you going to find the money?
Well, I think the idea about it is that we have the money in order to make the pay raise happen. It's just about how unique are we going to be, or how creative are we going to be, rather, to see that we get through this this potential situation that we're currently in. The last thing I want to see happen, though, is that we have a fiscal impact that allows us or puts us in a position where we have to kick the can down the road and we face the same thing next year. One of the things we have to do in order to make sure that this does not happen again is that we do regular reoccurring meetings every month where we are being updated on our budget. I think we have to expand our efforts of what we're doing currently inside of our finance department to ensure that we have, one, accounting systems that are up to date, and two, we supply our staff and people with enough resources to ensure that we can forecast or project better down the line what our budget is going to look like. I think our board members understand this now. I think our system is in a place where we understand that. And as I said before, we're going to make this happen. It's not even a question about whether or not we're going to pay our teachers. I just saw yesterday Baker School System just approved pay raises for their teachers. And also, you know, if you've been keeping up with anything, you see what happened in Livingston Parish. And this is not to throw them under the bus, by the way, but they had a referendum on the agenda, on a tax referendum on the ballot, though, and that was voted down. And those teachers almost revolted, and they left out of school. They had to shut schools down earlier than school before school ended. So we don't want to see anything like that happen. I don't want to see a mass exodus of our people that work in our system, who we definitely appreciate, leave us. We're going to make this happen. Obviously, the state is still working through their budget. The governor's in the House, as well as the Senate, is still trying to figure out how they're going to get teacher pay raises placed on the budget. But we're going to do our part. And I want to even say this right here, Jim, before I leave here. While Emmevere may be the highest right now, my goal is to get us to a place where East Baton Rouge Parish is the highest paid district in the entire state of Louisiana. And I think that we can get there.
We're hearing the voice of Darius Lannis. He's the president of the East Baton Rouge Parish School Board. Your number, if you'd like to join our conversation, is 877-217-5757. Now, a few listeners have asked about the superintendent, Cito Narcisse, who has made it apparent that he's seeking shelter elsewhere, trying to get a job in Florida, big job in the Miami area. Your thoughts?
Well, what I tell people is this. You know, we don't know what's going to happen. That, from my understanding, the final decision for who they're going to select in Broward County as a new superintendent is going to be June 15th. What I will tell people is my top priority right now are the 6,000-plus employees that work for East Baton Rouge Parish School System who are looking very diligently and making sure that they have pay increases as we promised. My other priority is making sure that our 40,000-plus students that attend East Baton Rouge Parish Schools are not impacted by this budget. That has been our primary, my primary thought process, and also my school board members, colleagues' primary thought process. At the end of the day, you know, whether the superintendent is here or not, those are still priorities that we have to make sure that we are in front of. Again, I don't know what's going to happen, but we will cross that bridge once it does occur. But next Friday, my understanding, or next Thursday rather, is supposed to be the date where they make their final decision to make that announcement.
What kind of a grade do you give Superintendent Narcisse?
Right now, it's hard for me to say. You know, I think my grade is going to be contingent on how this budget rolls out. So whether he's here with us or not, I think I can give a more detailed, more defined grade of him thus far. But right now, I think until we get to that budget, I really couldn't give a true definition.
Well, yeah, I know I'm not asking for an A or a B or a C or whatever, but has he done a good job?
I think he's done a decent enough job for sure, is what I say. And this is what I mean by that. If you're asking me where we are now based on what we were 4 years ago, we're in a much, much better place. We see dual enrollment across our district that has gone up tremendously. We are now working with our local colleges, LSU, Southern University, BRCC, something we never done before. The U.S. Secretary of Education has visited our school district, walked our schools, and personally told me that what he saw with Pathways to Bright Future should be the program that we implement across the country. When we went to Washington, D.C. for the Council of Great City Schools, every single urban district, the largest urban district that you can think of, including Broward, including Miami-Dade, including L.A., including New York, including D.C., including Chicago, all of these districts are looking at East Baton Rouge Parish, and they're saying, you guys are doing phenomenal work. How can we get on board? How can we get a scope of this work, and how can we do the same thing inside of our cities? I think what people, I really want people to understand is, when you hear about school safety, when you hear about budgetary issues, you hear about COVID, every single district, every large district in the country is going through the same thing right now. This was the overall theme that I heard, you know, when we talked to those superintendents, we talked to those school board members from other areas outside of the state. They're all going through the same thing. It's just how you approach it and how you address those problems that you're rolling into.
All right. Well, Charles Lucier, front page of The Advocate a few days ago, June 1st, writes, Narcisse supporters, notably the powerful nonprofit Stand for Children, are pressing the board to quickly renew Narcisse's contract set to expire at the end of this this month, a year from now, June 30th, 2024. They want the board to act before Narcisse is hired away as superintendent of Broward County, sixth largest district in the country, where he is a finalist for that position. It would seem that if he's offered that job, I don't know how much money you could pay him, but it probably right. wouldn't be enough. I think he's going to take the job, but is there anything you could do to show your love for him?
I think as of right now, I think he's just he's waiting to see, like the rest of the world is waiting to see what's going to happen. I think what you just said is absolutely correct, Jim. That's no amount of money you can put in front of a person. I mean, at the end of the day, you have to really just, you know, ask yourself, if an opportunity like that comes up, do you leave or do you stay? You know, those are what you call a once-in-a-lifetime opportunities. Broward is the sixth largest district in the country, so it brings about more opportunity. It brings about, you know, more depth to what your abilities are as a superintendent. Now, would I have wanted him to stay here longer? Absolutely, because for obvious reasons, if he were to leave, that would have meant that in the last 3 years alone, we went through four superintendents. That's unheard of. And when you look at stability, when you look at what makes a school district what it is, we need a leader at the helm that can build our vision out and can carry us the long way. I think that's what we want to see, you know, and again, whether he's here or not, we're going to continue to strive for that as a school district.
Carol in Jefferson Terrace. Carol, please be concise. You're on with Darius.
Yes, I was wondering what you could do, or have you got a plan to get the public behind you? It seems like the parish is more interested in cutting budgets than adding well-needed dollars. And is there a plan? Thank you.
All right. Carol's asking if there's a defined plan on the budget, or is this just talk?
No, this is not just talk, Ms. Carol. First of all, thank you for your question. Very good question as it relates to transparency and accountability. No, this is not just mere talk. As I said before, we're going to continue to have town hall meetings where we're dialoguing with our general public. We just had a town hall meeting about 2 weeks ago, and it was very well attended. I think over 100 people showed up for this town hall, and this is just after Memorial Day. But back to my point, no, this is not just mere talk. As I said before, we have until September to pass this budget if we need that amount of time. My hope is that we won't, but if we do, I'm going to exhaust every single option. As I said before, nothing is off the table. We're going to make sure that our teachers are going to be compensated and our support staff are going to be compensated, and it is done so in a way that it does not negatively impact our school district, our students, our employees, or the progress that we're trying to make here in this district. That is my commitment to every single employee and every single citizen that pays a dollar into this school system.
All right. Valerie in Shenandoah. Valerie, you're on with Darius Lannis. Hi, Valerie.
Hi. So I had read recently and understand that the board is considering a construction staging site next to Baton Rouge Flame in the low-income Black community off of Baywell and Naren. And I'm wondering what your position is on it, considering the amount of pollution that this construction site's going to have.
Your thoughts?
Very good question. Thank you again. We're still dialoguing through that process as it currently stands. It's not supposed to be a site that's supposed to trump up any air pollution or anything like that, from my understanding. It's supposed to be a buffer between the school and the actual site. And those dollars that they are using for that site, they're supposed to come back to our school district. The understanding is that as they're widening the I-10, I-12 corridor on the interstate, there is a construction site that needed some availability in terms of where they can place themselves. So we're still looking through it right now. But that's a really good question.
We'll be back and spend a few more minutes with Darius Lannis. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Robin Dow producing. And in just a moment, we are going to hear from Stephanie McNeil, prominent glamour writer. Her book is Inside the Unfiltered Lives of Influencers. Swipe up for more. 877-217-5757. In our remaining time with East Baton Rouge Parish School Board President Darius Lannis, James in Metairie. James, good morning, sir.
Good morning to you, Jim, and to your guests. Sir, I just want to let you, you know, make the public and yourself aware of the horrible problems that this legislature is going to make your job much, much harder. For example, the legal risks of teachers discussing their sexual orientation. Again, for example, if a female teacher has a baby over the summer, comes in the fall, and shows that child with her male heterosexual husband, that is a sexual orientation, which, according to this bill, if it becomes law, it says, quote, discussing his own or her own sexual orientation or gender identity. How will you manage this hideous new law?
What do you think, Darius Lannis?
I think anything that goes against directly classified people as it pertains to the law, I think that that's going to be challenged anyway. I won't support anything like that. And you know, there's been quite a few bills that have been coming through the legislature that I just simply cannot agree with, right? And there's so many changes and modifications that have been made to several bills that It's just ridiculous. So what I would say is that we're going to continue to protect those people that are a part of our district. We're going to not only speak out against it, but if we have to join forces with other organizations to ensure that all of our workers and employees and even our students are protected, we will do so. But that was a really good question.
877-217-5757. Darius Lannis with us for a few more moments, and let's try to slide in Phil in Jefferson. Phil, you're on. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Jim. Yes, sir, I want to thank you for your bravery. I mean, you and the teachers in our public school system risk their lives every day because of this insane policy of no policy about the AR-15. We need to ban those weapons.
All right, what about that issue?
About guns. Oh, well, first of all, guns won't ever be allowed inside of our schools. I can't tell you what's happening in other districts, but we are not a district that supports putting guns in the hands of teachers or students. It just will not happen. The day we allowed it to happen is the day that our schools are no longer schools. And we're going to be diligent about that. We're going to be firm about that. And we're going to continue, as I said earlier, we're going to continue to speak out against it. It's just not something that we need. It's not something that we should be promoting around our state. Schools should be schools. Teachers should be allowed to be teachers, and students should be allowed to be students, simply put.
All right. A few other questions. We've got to be concise here, though. Have board members been advocating on the teacher pay increase through the MFP on the state level?
I would say yes. You know, we're always going to advocate for pay raises as it regards MFP dollars. But we have to also remember that those MFP dollars are broken up respectively for all districts and all schools, whether it is a EBR-run school or whether it's not. So, you know, we're going to always make sure that we speak up and speak out to make sure that we can increase the MFP dollars that we are receiving to our district every single year.
All right. Here's Lee in North Carolina asking about the inconsistency of people who have gone to private schools and send their kids to private schools opining about public schools. Do they lose credibility when they start bloviating about public schools when they won't send their own children or didn't go there themselves?
First, I love the word bloviate. secondly, I would say no. You know, you can't tell a parent where to send their child. You know, that's their choice at the end of the day, whether they want to send them to charter, private, parochial, or traditional schools. That parent deserves to have the right to decide where they send their child. Now, what I will say is this. If you choose to send your child somewhere else, then I will say that it kind of defeats the purpose of you trying to speak out against the place that you just removed the child from. You know, it doesn't do anybody a world of good, especially when we're trying to not only repair reputations, but also improve reputations at the same time, because we wouldn't do the same thing if it was a private school, right?
But you're public school all the way.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. All right. But if other school board members, for example, though, should their kids be going to public schools or private schools?
I think that's completely up to them. You know, I think I would never tell any board members or any parent, period, where they should send their child. And by the way, I'm not against private schools. I'm not against charter schools. I am pro-education. Wherever you choose to send your child, I understand it. If you can afford to send your child to private, I understand. If you can afford to bring your child to traditional schools, I'm all for it.
Thank you, Darius Lannis. Good to visit with you. President of the East Baton Rouge Parish School Board. And as we round the corner and head for home, we're joined by glamour writer Stephanie McNeil. Her book is Swipe Up for More, Inside the Unfiltered Lives of Influencers. It's an unfiltered, colorful romp through the IRL world of influencers, spilling the tea on a $16 billion industry of content creation. And we are in a new world. And you are in the middle of it, and I think you've written a book that is overdue, but tell us about, quote, influencers and how these people tell us basically how we live.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. Influencers really do have an impact on all parts of society. They really are a smart friend in your pocket for so many women to tell them how to parent, how to eat, how to dress, and it's really something that I feel like has been understudied and under-discussed in mainstream culture.
Well, Stephanie McNeil is mentioned senior editor for Glamour. Her book is Swipe Up for More, and now we have influencers who have influence in all kinds of lives in our country, no matter what we do and how we do it, but are there misconceptions about the, quote, influencer industry?
Absolutely. I think that the biggest misconception, most likely, is that it's really easy to be an influencer. I think that, you know, we're all on social media. Many of us are on Instagram, and we post Instagram stories, and we, you know, post Instagram posts about our breakfast or our kids or our lives. And we think, oh, they're just doing that, but they're getting paid for it. That doesn't really make a lot of sense. But in actuality, many of these people have complete teams. Many of these Instagram posts take days or weeks to complete. And so that was one of the things that I really wanted to dive deep into as well, is what does it actually take to be an influencer?
877-217-5757 in our remaining time with Stephanie McNeil. And how did your fascination with this concept of influencers first arise?
You know, I graduated from college and I was living on my own, and I needed to learn how to live my life, which sounds a little silly, but I was like, okay, I'm going to the office. What do I need to wear? I am going to start cooking for myself. What do I need to make? And I just started Googling around, and I found blogs. And at the time, there was this really robust blog community where people wrote all of their tips and tricks on all of these different things to improve your lifestyle, so to speak. And I really became addicted to reading them. At my first job, I spent many, many hours reading them instead of actually doing my work. So that was kind of the impetus for my obsession. And then, 10 years later, I decided I wanted to write a book about it.
Stephanie, you mentioned Instagram. Obviously, this is a place where things happen, and perhaps we're influenced on what we talk about, what we think about. But what about the power of Instagram versus whether or not this is consistent with reality?
I think that it's very easy on Instagram to, you know, they say flex for the gram. There's a big Instagram versus reality question, you know, how much of this is real life? And it's really easy to make your life look perfect on Instagram. But one of the things that I discuss in the book that we've really seen in the industry over the past couple of years is this desire by the followers to see influencers tear down that perfection smokescreen and really show more of themselves. And I think that it's really interesting because it's good on one hand because, you know, it's not showing this idealized image that might not be real or attainable, but it also is hard for the influencers to show so much of themselves and show not only their good parts, but also their bad parts.
And a listener asks about how influencers are now able to get brand deals as a result of this process. How prevalent is that?
It's extremely prevalent. Brands, you know, every company, it seems like, in the world, all the way from a really small mom and pop shop to Target and Walmart, have really seen the value in influencers. And they realized a couple of years ago that they could pay an influencer a fraction of what they might pay an advertising agency to make a commercial. And they might see, if not as good, even better return on investment from working with an influencer. So it is. I don't think that there is a country or a company in America that has not done some form of influencer marketing. It's a huge business.
So how much do these internet celebrities make?
They make a lot of money.
What's a lot? You know, millions? Millions?
Oh, millions, millions. I'll tell you two examples. One of the people I interviewed was a teacher when she started doing influencing. And within a couple of years of starting her blog and then her Instagram, she was offered in one campaign. So that's just one campaign over the many she could do in the year. For one day of work, she was offered almost the entire equivalent of her yearly teaching salary.
All right. Well, unfortunately, we've got to go, but it's a fascinating book. Swipe Up for More from Stephanie McNeil. Glamour Writer. Signature support from First Financial.